This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Chris Hood. Chris is the Managing Director for Workplace Innovation at CB Richard Ellis. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Roger. Nice to be here.
Today, Chris is here to talk a little bit about workplace strategies, innovation, what it means for the government, what it means in the private sector, what's happening, trends, that sort of thing. And actually, Chris made a presentation today at the Coalition for Government Procurement's Federal Buildings Committee talking about workplace strategies and how over time HP was able to reduce costs, increase efficiency, and increase retention for its employee satisfaction through its innovations and changes in their workforce. And we appreciate that, Chris, joining us there today. But first, just big picture, can you talk a little bit about your background and how you came to CB Richard Ellis and what you're doing for them?
Yes, sure. It's a long, circuitous route. My background is actually in architecture. I was trained as an architect in England and moved to the U.S. in 1979, where I joined Digital Equipment Corporation, who later became, through a couple of takeovers, became Compaq and then HP. During those early days of digital, I was knocking out ice trays of offices in all over the Midwest for digital. And then there were a couple of very interesting experiences. One was a fire in Bracknell, which was devastated an office overnight. And what was really interesting to note was how the employees and managers knit together and within a day and a half were running again, using phones the size of bricks and really, really clunky portable laptops at the time. And so I got rather intrigued by this exercise and then started studying the notions of remote working. This takes you back to some of the efforts that were going on in Scandinavia to try and build life into remote communities which were otherwise being depopulated by people leaving them and going off to the city to work. So they were successfully creating workplaces far remote from corporate centers. And this became actually quite intriguing to me. So I started introducing such ideas to digital, noticing work that was beginning to be advanced in other parts of the world, and decided to get digital equipment on board. With subsequent takeovers of Compaq and then to HP, I had a real opportunity to advance my knowledge and understanding and lust for more information with HP, who was already a pretty advanced thinker in terms of workplace. So the story took me to HP, a 30-year career, and then 14 months or so ago, I decided to make a change and moved over to CBRE, and I've been enjoying their life there ever since for the last 14 months or so.
So can you talk, with regard to HP, you made a fascinating discussion today at the Federal Buildings Committee that the coalition hosted, talking about what HP did with regard to its workplace and how it increased efficiencies and reduced their footprint, and ultimately were able to save a fair amount of money.
Yeah, the technology industry is challenged with competition from across the world. So it's a substantial requirement for them these days that they look at every element of cost in their structure and try to expunge waste. And when challenged to drive occupancy costs down by Mark Hood, who was the CEO at the time, we chose to use the fact that HP offices were not heavily utilized. The fact is that enabling technology had allowed employees, managers alike, to work from a lot of different places, a lot of times of the day, doing a tremendous variety of different kinds of work. So we set out to understand utilization. Average utilizations were in the sort of 35 to 50% range.
So that means, like, you know, most of the time there were about one third of the people were actually in their offices, right?
That's right. In fact, if you or I were to walk around an HP office at that time and counted 100 workstations, only 35 of them would have been in use at any moment in time. So that represented in our minds a huge opportunity. Could we find out the people that genuinely sat in their office a lot, and we wouldn't change anything there, but find those sections of our workforce that were actually taken away to other places to work, other places within the building or outside the building? And, you know, it's worth noticing that HP did not drive them out of the office. They'd left of their own accord in order to get their jobs done. So bottom line was, you know, empty offices, lacking in energy and excitement, huge opportunity to get rid of space and then to turn that space into savings, which went to the bottom line of the company.
Yeah, well, that sort of, you know, gets to the big picture question that, you know, your experience doing that, and now you're at CB Richard Ellis. And can you, just for the listening audience, talk about what do we mean by alternate workplace strategies? What is that sort of big picture? You've touched on it with what you've talked about that happened at HP, but, you know, there seems to me many elements to it. Am I correct?
You are absolutely correct. The subject of alternative workplace strategy or workplace strategy has to be focused around the work and around people doing the work. And so, you know, those who dive into this from a furniture perspective or a building perspective sometimes are missing the point. I think the primary need is to understand how people are working both today and how they and the management team anticipates them working in the future. And, you know, the world is becoming more complex. So the Wright brothers designed an airplane, the two of them, on their own. Now it takes 1,000 people to design a jet engine. So, you know, the world...
In many different locations, right?
In many different locations, correct. And so the world has become more complex, work has become more complex, and the imperatives for people to work together are changing, which means that the workplace needs to change also to make that possible. One might characterize the land of Dilbert, the land of large spreads of workstations, as being warehouses of people. And I think thoughtful people nowadays are saying, gosh, there's got to be more to it than that. What is the essential value of people being brought together into one place? And surely the value is to do with the interaction between them and the value of face-to-face contact.
Right. So when I think of it and what you've described there, I think of just getting into the implementation sort of idea of, you know, I think of, you described like digital equipment sound like they were telecommuting in a certain sense. They had those big, you know, 1980s brick phones that people walked around with. I keep thinking in Wall Street, what was that guy's name? He had the big phone. But, you know, when they do come together, how do they engage? Is it different now than it was, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago? You know, how has the culture changed or even generational changes? I mean, all these things go into it. And I know we're going to touch on all of those. But, you know, do you see from your perspective that more and more organizations in the private sector are looking to how to re-engineer their workplaces?
Yeah, absolutely. And honestly, many of them are cost driven. But not exclusively. And so, you know, you asked the question earlier, what are the drivers? And from organization to organization, they will change. So, for example, some sectors are sincerely concerned about how they are going to attract talent into their organizations in the future. So the idea of creating workplaces that understand the goals and aspirations of successive generations is really important.
Now, Chris, I have a goal right now. That my goal is to sell some ads. So we do have to take a break. But when we return, we'll be talking more with Chris Hood. Chris is a managing director for workplace innovation at CB Richard Ellis. And we'll continue. We'll pick up where we left off with regard to attracting and retaining talent and how the workplace and the structure of the workplace impacts that. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
In the ever-changing national security and IT environments, L3 delivers innovative, cost-effective solutions. As a Fortune 200 company, L3 offers customers global end-to-end services and solutions for large-scale systems. No matter the challenge, L3 has the agility, technology, and innovation required for mission performance. From cybersecurity to next-generation IT, L3's passion for its customers' missions drives its commitment to excellence. L3. Agility, innovation, performance.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're talking to Chris Hood. Chris is a managing director for workplace innovation at CB Richard Ellis. And Chris, when we took the break, you were discussing or getting into the idea of how workplaces can attract and retain talent in terms of how people engage and come up with ideas and just sort of that's intellectual spark to, you know, that drives a business and keeps people interested in their jobs. Can you continue?
Absolutely. As we deal with clients across the globe, certainly one of the things that keeps one of the chairmen of one of our clients up at night is this notion of how do I attract talent in the future? You know, that's an intriguing question. And so one of the things that we at CBRE decided to do was to engage with a future generation. And in fact, we struck up a partnership with Georgia Tech at the business school there and initiated a real estate practicum, which gave us access to some really smart students who were really interested in sort of pursuing this subject of workplace. We had them do a study amongst their co-students and colleagues to understand their outlook on the workplace, what their aspirations were, how they felt about work. And it's clearly different than in the past. It's clearly obvious to me that when they grow up to be gray and short of hair,
like you and I,
they will never think the same way that we do now.
So. No, I shouldn't treat my guests like that, Chris. that's how I look. Okay.
Ditto. These students engaged in a very fascinating way. They sent out surveys. They interviewed students. They photographed where they liked to work, how they liked to work, the technologies that they chose to use. And it's very clear that this is this group of students who's, you know, 24 to say 27 today, these were postgrad students, really are quite social. They don't care about the trappings of the workplace. They do care about the social aspects and they do care about being together. These are guys who value mentorship, who value learning quickly from others, and then getting on with work. It's actually a great generation to employ. I think these guys will be extremely motivated, competitive. I think we'll see innovation from them. But clearly, the environment that supports that kind of activity is very different than this warehousing idea of a workplace. This is where people being together and people valuing each other and interacting with each other is different than a sort of intensive cube layout of say the past.
Right. It's not, people aren't, I mean, that sounds to me like people aren't in boxes. Like, you know, I used to practice law. I was in a box. Okay. And I had closed off and I couldn't talk to other people, but, It seems to me they want open spaces and places where they can get together and, dialogue. Is that, what would their ideal office look like? Maybe that's a great question.
I'll give you an example, Roger, of which is here in Washington. My son is a computer scientist. He's a software engineer. He does work for the government. He worked in a small lab in a government office and enjoyed a very open, convivial atmosphere. For a while, he was moved to a corporate headquarters out in the western suburbs, where he was then, he and his teammates were put into a very cubicle-centric environment. And the first thing they did was actually take all the panels down. So whereas traditional software engineers, i.e. traditional meaning old, might value physical separation from others, might value no line of sight to others, this generation was exactly the opposite. They wanted to read body language. They wanted to see each other. They wanted to be able to scoot next to each other. And something that would be seen as interference and disruption by an older generation was actually seen as teamwork and collaboration by this younger generation.
Yeah, and how does, and with that, from that perspective too, this generation is right very into technology, right? I mean, my daughter, she's in high school, but she does well, but I go up there and open her door and she's doing her homework and she's got the laptop going and talking to somebody. She's got some earphones in and she's got her book or whatever and taking her notes. And it's like four different things going on at once. And like, I can barely handle one. So, how does the multitasking and technology, how does that play with these folks?
Well, interestingly enough, you and I think technology is a big deal. We've talked about it for the last, said of 5 to 10 years as enabling. I think we've just crossed a barrier now where, of course you've got technology. It's just a given.
Right.
And that connectivity is a given and that technology is actually not a big deal anymore. I think, if there's one theme that seems to be emerging, it is that the technology needs to fit the person. They have to feel right with it. They have to feel comfortable with it. So this notion of bring your own device to work, I think, is the challenge that is now being set to IT groups. Can you have a Microsoft-based technology and an Apple technology, both supported by the same IT organization? How does that work? But I think that's where we're coming to. I think the student of today says, I'm going to bring my technology with me, and you just better help me connect it to the network, to the cloud, and whatever.
So, when you think of all these things, and how does CB Richard Ellis, how do you go about trying to figure out and identify works best for a particular client, whether it's the government or, a private company?
The truth is we watch them. And it's really interesting what you can discern and what you can observe by simply watching people. And that watching can take several forms. It can take utilization studies to understand patterns of use. So where are people working and how are they working? One can then clearly just go into the office and observe where do people like to do things. And what's interesting is, everybody has their own view of perfection. So that what one person might see as an ideal setting, it's daylit, it's cool, it's amongst other people. Another might find abhorrent, and so they, so they'll head off to dark corners where it's warm, and they're on their own. And everybody's different, and somehow the challenge of the workplace creator these days is to try and anticipate the relative balance of all those different points of view, and create an environment where people have choices as to where they work, and in rough alignment with the likely demand for those choices.
Now, is part of that too, when you're looking at that, there are certain, parameters, for lack of a better word. We heard today at the meeting that the Federal Buildings Committee meeting where you spoke and several government folks spoke as well, is this issue of the size of an office. And how offices are shrinking, you know, how does that play into it? And I think where I want to go next is a little bit talking about that cost factor. We touched a little bit about earlier. You know, we've talked a lot about, you know, retaining the workforce and, you know, the intellectual firepower of a company and making those folks happy. But there is a bottom line involved here, right? And a lot of it is we see offices shrinking from what, you know, you and I probably started with.
Right. And you know, much of the past has actually been driven by hierarchy rather than need. So in other words,
The bigger kahuna you are, the bigger office you got.
Yeah, that's it, regardless of whether you're there or not. And so, you know, contemporary thinking, best practice thinking would say, well, let's actually conceive this environment based upon need, not want or not notions of how long have you been with the company.
Right. And so, Chris, I need to take another break, but when we return, we'll be talking more with Chris Hood, Managing Director for Workplace Innovation at CBU Richard Ellis. And we'll continue talking about footprint, what it means for organizations in terms of saving money, frankly, the bottom line, and that affects both commercial companies and the federal government. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
In the ever-changing national security and IT environments, L3 delivers innovative, cost-effective solutions. As a Fortune 200 company, L3 offers customers global end-to-end services and solutions for large-scale systems. No matter the challenge, L3 has the agility, technology, and innovation required for mission performance. From cybersecurity to next-generation IT, L3's passion for its customers' missions drives its commitment to excellence. L3. Agility, innovation, performance.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're talking to Chris Hood. Chris is the Managing Director for Workplace Innovation at CB Richard Ellis. And Chris, when we took the break, you were just about to talk about footprint, size, and hierarchy. we started that discussion, and I'll just let you pick up there. Go ahead.
Great, thanks. The traditional approach, as we said, is often based upon hierarchy, and maybe more thoughtfully now, it should be centered around the actual work. So people who need a large space to work in because they have lots of equipment or they have layout requirements, you know, should probably have it regardless of where they stand in an organization. The opposite to that, though, is we know the boss with his big corner office is hardly
ever
there.
Hey, be careful there. I'm one of those. No, I'm just kidding. No, just kidding. Go ahead.
He's hardly ever there. And he doesn't deserve one, Roger.
Okay.
So, you know, I think leadership is provided by managers who recognize the essential truths here and then begin to, you know, coalesce into a body of thinking which said, you know, let's mirror the activity that's going on in the office. So if we're not there very often, let's actually share a space. Whether it be a full height office or whether it be an open space, you know, what do I essentially want to do in this thing, and what is my requirement? The modern office essentially therefore is broken up into a assigned space where, you know, there is a genuine understanding that a person is present a lot and requires that kind of space, and that's where they work. Others, however, and there's frankly a growing number of those others, works in, shall we call it a neighborhood. So they are surrounded by the same people that are in, such as they are in at the time, but they may use free address space. So they sit in this workstation one day and the one next to it the next day, depending on who else is in. In this way, organizations are able to reduce their footprint dramatically. There are people with footprints that are 50% of the size they were 3 or 4 years ago. And that is a testament to this activity-based workplace, we'll call it, which is fundamentally built around the work of the organization.
Yeah, and it's that's the whole idea of hoteling and how, you know, and an interesting thing as well is the perception of how long people actually think they are in the office versus reality and what that means and trying to educate, you know, them about that. Can you talk about that a bit?
Yes, I can. We did some studies in which we simply went and asked people how much they thought they were in the office. And whether it was a politically loaded question or not, Most of them argued that they were in the office 85 to 90% of the time. When we actually measured them, it was typically less than half of that. So there's either an honest misunderstanding or there's a sort of nuanced answer intended to reassure us that they're there a lot and they deserve their own space.
Right. Yeah, can we turn to, I mean, all these things we've talked about, you know, now I'd like to talk a little bit about what's going on in the federal government and the challenges it faces, moving forward with its footprint and trying to reduce it given the budgetary world we live in. Can you start to talk a little about that? And I have some follow-up questions.
Yeah, absolutely. The government is not obviously immune to efficiency. I think there's some very smart and thoughtful people in the government who've been tackling this for a while. And I think common sense and the need to be efficient with tax dollars is truly evident. I think the government is learning from private practice, where private companies have been off or public companies have been off and exacted very bold, significant workplace strategy programs and saved an awful lot of dollars in doing so. That's attractive to the government. However, the thing that intrigues me the most is not just the cost savings, which is obviously as a taxpayer I enjoy, but the fact that done well, this has the potential to improve the productivity of those same people, perhaps to improve service levels, to give people more time to do valuable work. And so we're as much interested in the effectiveness of the workplace as we are in its efficiency.
And I think to your point there too about that is it also goes to the idea of retaining, you know, workers in the federal government. And, you know, there's lots of smart people in the federal government doing good work and, you know, creating an environment where they want to continue to do that is in the government's interest. And when they look at this, it seems to me it would be an imperative, you know, moving forward in that and reducing costs,
right?
Trying to do both those things.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think clever, smart people want to do meaningful work. How can we use the workplace to, cover the routine quickly and provide more significant challenges, challenge people to, you know, improve the way they're working or the things they're working on, to not do things that we do simply out of routine, but to look at every hour we spend in the day and establish whether that's the best 8 hours or 12 hours, however long you work, of value. And I think when you do that, when you give people, in a sense, the broadness of the challenge to define their work for themselves, that way you're likely to keep good people around. They are quite capable of creating direction, improvement, all by themselves, but there needs to be a sort of management prerogative to go along with it.
Yeah. Well, with regard to the federal, you know, footprint, do you see any unique challenges versus for the federal government versus what private companies have gone through, or is it, you know, sort of this, you know, the same issues? It seems to me the government and a for-profit organization do have some different sort of cultural and bottom line, you know, goals, I guess, for lack of a better term.
I think there are differences and there are different responsibilities. For example, the government owns a lot of buildings, and by placing, you know, a large number of those on the public market, in other words, disposing of them, either owned buildings or leased buildings, then you flood the real estate market with even more empty space. However, I don't think that's a reason not to do it. I think, you know, a challenge can come to repurpose and revisit buildings more creatively. So I think there is a sort of responsibility there. But in the time I've been watching the government through some of the benchmarking activity I did while at HP, I'm becoming more and more convinced that the challenges are the same. Clearly, some of the processes that are involved in procuring capital, in making cases for investment in savings, are more complex and more difficult in government circumstances. But essentially, the structural challenges are still the same.
Well, I have one for you, and I want to ask you this. Is it sort of the same when you're talking about that mid-level manager, the GS-15, who's been in the government for 20 years and has got that, you know, comfy office, so to speak, over maybe close to the corner, and the same sort of level person in the private sector, you know, just trying how, you know, those folks, you know, don't, you know, they're not, you know, having been one of those folks, you know, I understand that change can be a very sort of interesting or painful thing, for lack of a better, I can't figure out how to say it, but how do you get people to buy into these kind of changes where you go from cubicles to open space to, you know, these collaborative like setups where people, you know, sit around a table and, you know, plug in their PDAs or whatever they're using and, you know, all work together?
Well, the one thing I can assure you is that those people you've just described exist in private businesses as well, in large numbers, and they are actually the impediment to success. They are the element. Middle management is the area where they have taken on their mantle of looking after everybody's interests, or their perception of everybody's interests, which may or may not be realistic. And so we find reticence to move forward, particularly in the sort of middle management groups. I think senior management understands the importance of going somewhere new, of preparing for the future, of in fact saying, look, I've reached the top. My job now is to actually mentor the growing generations coming up into the workplace, share my knowledge with them. Middle managers are, you know, much more prone to entitlement, much more keen to hang on to what they have already. And it's a barrier. That is the change management focal point.
Right. And that's sort of across organizations, period, whether it's private or public.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah.
I think that's right.
Yeah. Well, the point, and we do have to take our last break, Chris, but when we return, we'll be talking more with Chris Hood, Managing Director for Workplace Innovation at CB Richard Ellis, and we'll continue our discussion on workplace innovation and where the federal government's headed. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, we're talking to Chris Hood. Chris is the Managing Director for Workplace Innovation at CB Richard Ellis. And Chris, when we took the break, we were talking a little bit about middle managers and that sort of thing and their reticence to change. And, you know, the point, one point was what you described to me was in terms of leadership, the top leadership and their concern for developing and nurturing, you know, the next generation of leaders. That really is good succession planning for any organization. But with that, I wanted to turn to you know, how we solve this problem and what you've laid out for us, all these different factors that go into workplace innovation. Can you describe or talk about how do you, an organization, whether it's government or private sector, go about, you know, changing that office? Is it an integrated approach? Is it a phased approach? Is it a, you know, a modular approach? Just go at it.
Right. So as I explained to you before, my background is architecture. And frankly, the skill that imparts is problem solving. And so I would say that the modern workplace is one in which a lot of problems are being solved. And what it takes to solve them is integration of technology, integration of place, and integration of services. And by the way, you know, all wrapped in this sort of integration of how people think and work and act and what they like and what they don't like. So if, for example, you look at a satisfactory conference experience, it's not just sitting down in a comfortable conference room. It's, does the technology work? If you're connected to another place, can you hear what people are saying? Can they hear you? If there's a video component, is it easy to use? Does it work? Are people's laptop cables all over the surface? Are the wires trailing all over the place? So there's a technology piece, there's a space piece. If you get served coffee or if there are other sort of service requirements, you know, are they easy to acquire? So this is many things coming together to make work easy and graceful for people. So we really talk hard about this integration. We think it's absolutely the key to a successful work environment.
Yeah, and just another point there with regard to, you know, the new workplace environment and strategies for it is, and I'm going just back to the financial issue, there's real opportunities for organizations, and I know you've touched on it earlier, but I'd like to have you just emphasize it again. There's great opportunities for the federal government and for private organizations to save a lot of money in their, in their space demands through innovation and taking a look at their workplace strategies.
Yes, I always like to say less space but better space. If you want to get rid of cost in terms of a real estate portfolio, get rid of space, and you can do it in some cases with such an incisive knife edge in terms of reducing fat and taking out of the system that reductions in the 40-50% range are in fact possible. And what that does
for your real estate costs,
in
right?
Real estate costs, and what that, and it actually that allows you to do is then reinvest in the workplace behind, which actually ends up being a better space. It's more supportive of people, and you've actually got a lot of activity going on in a smaller space, which actually gives it more energy, more interaction, all the kinds of things that you actually hope from a workplace.
Well, can you, for the listening audience, to the best you can, sort of, we don't have pictures, can describe a contemporary, office space, what it looks like and how it operates?
Yeah, a workplace is, it's a branded place. It's a place that reminds people, it emphasizes the culture and the wherewithal about the organization it represents. So it's a true reflection of the values of that organization. It's an environmentally sensitive place. So it's built of the right materials. It doesn't waste things. It runs efficiently. It reduces the amount of energy in it. It uses water respectfully. These are all positive elements. But if you walk into this space, it has walls in it. It has ceilings. It has very efficient but low glare lighting. It's comprised of a series of spaces which offer people choices. So there's certainly openness to reflect the need for interaction. Some of that openness might be required dedicated space, and some of it might be free address. But there are also pockets of spaces which are enclosed. There's quiet rooms where people can go to with no phones, where they won't be interrupted, very much like a library reading room. There are focus rooms, very small rooms where you can go in, shut the door, make a private phone call, have a confidential conversation with another person. I think we're seeing the mix of conference rooms changes. In other words, science is now suggesting that there's a lot more small meetings than large meetings. And typically, we've kind of over-designed for conference room space in total, but shortcome in the number of rooms. So what we're realizing is a lot of meetings of 3 to 4 people, and not so many of 14 to 20. So we're getting that mix right. I think also social space is becoming more important as a business space. In other words, some people, when given a chance to come in and work, will literally take their laptop and go to the busiest place in the office, the cafeteria, because that's actually where they feel secure. So they will go in there.
Those are the people who end up in Starbucks, right?
Those are the ones.
Yeah.
And they shut the door and the work goes on around them. And yet they feel somehow undistracted. They like the activity or the amount of daylight or whatever it is, maybe the access to coffee and food, who knows. But so we've turned some things around in the contemporary office.
And in that office, just in terms of the way, I think what we heard today at the Federal Buildings Committee meeting was a lot about where, you know, people, when they do have a desk or whatever you want to call it, or they share a desk with someone, is that's kind of an interesting dynamic too, where I think you touched on, you know, where the senior leadership really puts themselves, and then who wants to be around them versus, you know, who tries to look for that farthest away place. How does that look?
Well, there's a couple of motivations there. One is there's a sort of social strata which could develop, which says, I don't want to be near to those people, so I'm going to move somewhere distant, which is a matter of choice. But I think the real potential is somewhat a cycling of people next to each other. So, you know, if you take some kinds of jobs, they actually benefit from being close to unimagined other groups of people. So if I, as an architect, sit next to an event planner or to an engineer, a software engineer, you know, I learn more about what's going on around me. It broadens my set of experiences. And I begin to sort of connect dots that never got connected before. So finance sitting next to sales, sitting next to marketing. Some of these are very logical. Some of them are illogical, but they create unexpected consequences and values for the corporation. So this notion of people being free and able to move around and change adjacencies, I think, is a very powerful idea.
Yeah, and just a powerful idea. I want you to give you an opportunity to finish with one question I had too, and that is, how do you change that culture from people who've had the big offices, or even the, you know, people who have been organized in one way and sat in one way, and now they've got to share space. They've got to, it's more open. I know when I thought about, you know, being in an open space, I cringed at that idea. How do you change that? Is it saying, hey, here's an opportunity to ensure your jobs as opposed to pay for, you know, unused real estate? What do you do? How does that, or how do people approach that, organizations approach that?
Well, I think there's two answers to that. One is to show people the difficulties they have now of finding people or finding information, and somehow connect this new world to a solving of their particular problems. In other words, what's in it for me? That's a very powerful statement. I think the other thing that can be done is to show examples of how other people have solved this problem, had the same objections and concerns about entering this new world, have been there, solved it, and are actually doing really quite well. That becomes very powerful ally as well. So I think it's a combination of several things: the experience of others, and this notion of a vision. This is how we're going to work and behave in the future. And if management can get behind it and support it, then you can, in fact, get there.
Well, Chris, a fascinating topic. I really enjoyed our conversation today. And it seems to me there's a great opportunity for the federal government to save lots of money and get more efficient just through, you know, implementing, you know, modern workplace strategies. So I really appreciate the conversation. I want to thank my guest today, Chris Hood, Managing Director for Workplace Innovation at CB Richard Ellis. And you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, Tuesday mornings at 10:30, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.